Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. For many people, the recent winter storms caused minor inconveniences, lost school days, staggered work schedules, and last-minute trips to the grocery store. But for the tens of thousands of hungry children and families in North Carolina, the storms meant many people didn't have enough food to eat. Here to talk about it and the state of hunger in our state is Alan Briggs with the North Carolina Association of Food Banks.
Well, Alan, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Chris. I appreciate coming back.
There was a lot discussed during the winter weather about what happens to kids and families who rely on schools to give them lunches and don't have food at home, and an additional burden, and folks can't even, in many cases, get to the food bank to help.
That's exactly right, Chris. It's we've talked a lot in the past about how the folks we serve have to juggle so many of their daily needs. We feel inconvenienced because we can't get milk or bread. But the face of hunger has changed, as we've talked about. So many of these folks can't get to work. Work's canceled or their hours are cut back. So you start with the economic impact there. If they are open and the kids are out of school, then they've got child care costs and additional burdens for transportation and taking care of the kids. But as you noted, probably the worst impact is it's a sad fact that probably in North Carolina, 40% or more of the children in North Carolina are on free or reduced lunch. And they are dependent on obtaining a decent meal twice a day at schools, both breakfast and lunch. So when the schools are closed, many of these children simply are not being fed. And then if you go into the end of the week with school out, we're not able to distribute our backpacks as so many of our food banks and pantry partners do for giving them food through the weekend. They're not able to get to the after-school programs that often provide snacks and additional food. So it's the old domino effect, a tremendous impact on these families. This cold weather we've had, heating bills have gone up. And as you know, the programs for providing heating assistance to low-income families has been steadily dropping over the last decade. As I say, we may seem inconvenienced, but for these folks, it's like double, triple, quadruple whammies.
It's interesting. I mean, just listen to you talk about it. It's just a reminder, I guess, for all of us that it literally is day to day for a lot of families. One small thing that is off means they won't get the next meal.
That's exactly right. Before, I think I've referred to them as jugglers because it's a constant trade-off of, do I take my sick child to the doctor and get a prescription filled? Do I pay the additional heating bill? Do I get groceries this week? Am I going to be able to put gas in the car? It's just choice after choice after choice. And the study that Feeding America did last year showed that in about four or five categories, three quarters of the people we serve make a trade-off every month for some of the things I've described, be it health care, utilities, transportation, or child care costs over food. You know, the notion that we can't at least start out the day with that meeting the basic food, shelter, clothing needs before you go into the other headaches is really stressful on these families. And, you know, the thing that we try to get across to the public in large measure is for an employer, an employee coming who's malnourished because he or she shared their meal or gave up their meal to feed their child is not productive. It's not efficient. It's not economically sound. And nothing worse than wasting your tax dollars. If you really want to talk about wasting dollars, send a undernourished child to school. Their cognitive development's behind. They're going to fall behind. They're not going to perform. They're in that classroom, but they're not fully present. And we pay a terrible price for that.
We want to talk about the larger issue of food insecurity. But during inclement weather, I mean, what are the options really for people who are on the edge?
Well, it's very tough. And one of the things that you alluded to is for us, we would love to step up our efforts. But for organizations like Meals on Wheels, for organizations like our pantries and our food bank network, we depend so heavily on volunteers. You start right from the fact that if the roads are bad, people can't get out, or if the schools close and the kids are at home, a lot of our volunteers simply can't get in and give us the assistance we need, or our drivers can't make deliveries. So at the risk of sounding a little crass, you know, it's a time maybe to think about, okay, I didn't have to go out to lunch today, for those of us who are fortunate, and that money we might have spent at lunch would be an excellent thing to, okay, donate my lunch today to the food banks, because it hits us particularly hard. And when we can't get out and do that, these other folks don't have options. If we can't get to them, it has a very, very tough impact on the whole network across the line. And you can't make that up. I mean, you can't go back and feed them for yesterday's meal.
Where are we in the larger issue, and we've talked about this before, of food insecurity in North Carolina? You mentioned 40% roughly of kids are on free and reduced lunch. That means that they come from families that don't have a lot of resources. Where do you think we are in an era when the economy seems to be slowly recovering?
You know, we're all hopeful that those signs are accurate and that things are improving, but I don't think anyone would argue that all boats are being floated. I think that at the bottom, with the folks that we serve, it really has not trickled down yet to that point. North Carolina continues to be among the leaders nationally in the number of adults experiencing food insecurity each month, 1 in 6. And I'm sad to be back here again saying we're still right up there, neck and neck at the top for the number of children, 1 in 4 under age 5. At that end of the economic spectrum, the improvement, if there is any yet, it's very, very slow.
And want to make sure we let you tell us how people who are listening can help the food banks of North Carolina. But is it realistic to think that just food banks alone, for example, or these efforts can solve these problems? Or does it require also policy changes and the cultural changes and a lot of other things?
Absolutely, Chris. You and I know we consider ourselves to be providing first aid, but it is just that. It's a responsive activity trying to meet that need. But we are not shortening the line as a society. As we just said, our numbers are not improving. So unless we begin to look at that whole client, and food banks are trying to make that adjustment, we are looking more to collaborate with other organizations, doing job training, providing other skills and benefits that these folks need in order to be whole, so that they're not having to make the trade-offs we talked about a few moments ago. Food banks, certainly, we're very proud of how efficient we are, and more we're asking people to make dollar donations so that we can leverage that with our buying power and our partners, rather than asking you to go buy some tuna fish and peanut butter and bring to us. We're very grateful, don't get me wrong. But a lot of times now, too, we're trying to expand rapidly the amount of produce we're able to obtain and put into our system. I was at the National Hunger Policy Conference this week. My favorite part was having pediatricians and hospitals coming in and taking an active role. And the phrase really stuck in my mind, nutrition is medicine. And the woman from the hospitals in Pittsburgh asked the simple question, which makes more sense, to spend $20 a day to feed a family for the day or to spend $4,000 to hospitalize someone suffering from diabetes or hypertension because they're malnourished? And even my poor math skills can tell you that would be a much better trade-off.
And one thing we always talk about, and I think it's important to remind people who folks are who are hungry.
I'm glad you asked that, because I was thinking coming in, if there's one thing, when you said, Alan, what would you like to get across? I'd really love to change that face of hunger. I had a dear friend who was well-meaning, asked me a couple of weeks ago, in all sincerity, and he's very supportive of what we do, very sensitive, and he said, where are these people? I just don't see them. And I was embarrassed that I don't think I gave a very good answer. It caught me a bit off guard, because my first reaction is, and there's a truth in it, is you and I don't see them. We're fortunate. We go to work. The environments we're in each day, in many respects, we're not seeing the hardcore poor. We're not confronted with it. But then I started thinking later, too, that wasn't an adequate answer, because part of the dilemma we face is hunger, there's not an obvious characteristic. It's not like being old or young. It's not like being male or female. It's not even about being the ethnic differences, things that are visible to us. And what I should have said is it may be that person in front of you at the gas line who is putting gas in the car today, but their kids are staying home unattended because they couldn't afford childcare. Could be the person at church next to you who's too proud to tell you that they've lost their job and lost their health care and they're having to give up food to pay medical bills. Could be countless numbers of the families that your children go to school with. So I think one of the hardest things to do is to get people to accept that it's not the lobster-eating surfer dude that they show on TV. It's not the addictive personality or the homeless person. Chances are it's a working mother with two kids who's in part-time jobs, doesn't have health care benefits or retirement benefits, trying to do the juggle we talked about earlier.
Finally, how can people help? You mentioned that cash donations are probably best. What should people do if they are listening and they want to help?
www.ncfoodbanks.org. Anywhere you are, you can go on and find a link to your local food bank. From there, find pantries, soup kitchen shelters in your area. Volunteerism, I was a little surprised. North Carolina used to have a pretty strong history of volunteerism. We seem to be declining. So take your children, take your family out, make it a... Frankly, it's fun to go spend a day at a food bank. It's one way we can help educate people about who we're serving and back to changing that face. But we are so dependent. Part of what makes us so efficient are that vast cadre of volunteers. Last year across the state, we had over 400,000 hours of volunteer service. So that enables us to not have to pay office workers, not have to pay for warehouse staff, and put that money right back into putting food on the table.
Well, let's hope people are listening and do that. And thanks for all you're doing. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Always enjoy it. It's good to see you.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.